Welcome to the podcast Tech Effect. The podcast is about testing and development in science and debates with industry experts.
Well, we already actually started. Hello, yeah, everyone. So briefly about episode. This episode will dive into the world of artificial intelligence, right? We're going to explore different types from narrow AI to general intelligence. We'll discuss how large language models are, like how GPT-4 even works. And we'll also explore how AI models are being used for image processing, hopefully. What are the limitations and potential risks? And look into more ethical considerations surrounding the AI, about the biases in training data and computational and environmental costs of training large AI data. So about us, joining today is Kwan, who has extensive experience in the software engineering field and is currently working, if I'm correct, at OpenAI, right? Okay.
Yep. Yes.
So maybe you introduce yourself from what side?
All right. Hi, guys. So my name is Kwan, and I'm here in Vietnam, and I'm a Vietnamese. So I was lucky enough to get education in the U.S. while I was in high school. And then I was living in Silicon Valley as well for college. So that's why I got into AI really kind of fast, because I see the people around me doing it. And then when I got into it, I got into the research side of AI. So it's very deep on the mathematical side and the theory side. At my last year of college, I got a invitation to join OpenAI on an intern on the DALL-E 2 team. After that, it's just when I decide to go back to Vietnam after 7 years in the US. Relationship between me and OpenAI almost stopped, and then I got an email. They saying that they got a new project that they are short on humans, so they kind of need me, and they kind of open with doing it from a remote position. So I'm just kind of okay. Yeah, I'm kind of just tag along here, do the stuff with them. Yep. So it's very cool to work at OpenAI. People move very fast because it's like a startup environment. And then you guys can see how execution is being done during the years of ChatGPT. You got ChatGPT for 2 or 3 months, and then you got GPT-4. So, and then GPT-4 is a whole new kind of model with images, multimodal. So you guys can see that it's really fast.
I think before we dive into more that side of stuff, let's maybe explain, maybe you could explain, what is artificial intelligence and how does it work for us in simple terms, maybe, so everyone can understand it.
Yeah, you want me to explain about AI, right?
Well, maybe in a simple terms, yeah, you could just say, what is it?
Yep. So AI is kind of a very big field. And then the thing that we are seeing right now is machine learning, which is a subset of AI. You guys know this, before the era of machine learning, there has been a lot of program that they claim that they have AI, and it is AI. And in the code, it's just a bunch of if and else. If you guys are software engineer, you guys should know it. It's 100% rule based. Program. And then we got machine learning, where we got this kind of data, just because people are now on the web, people on Facebook and Twitter, we generate a lot of data every second. So those kind of data, when we feed into the machine for it to learn, it will pick up the pattern of the data. So that is how it looks at the data, and it's going to predict the data based on the pattern that it has been learning on. And then that is how it's kind of achieved the same level as human on like image classification. Like you feed an image in and it say it's a dog or is it a cat? And because they're machine, so they learn much faster than us. So you can see kind of the new deep learning kind of thing just booming up in the last like 5 years, where like things are moving like very fast every day. If you guys see now, like there's new large language model every day.
Yeah.
Right now, so yeah, that is how the AI thing I think is right now.
I think it's the stage interesting how the community is evolving, and also it's interesting to see like how many people are starting to use AI in every single conversation, even though like some of them are just what you say if analysis statements, which also includes that. But when talking about AI in recent years, it's the focus has been on deep learning and all these new features of like computer vision, language models, and also like well, the text to speech to text kind of interpretations of the everyday things that happen. But I'm very excited to see not only how this technology evolves, but also the implementations of it. Because one thing is the like these large models like ChatGPT and other companies working on their own, but also where do you implement it and well, what technologies arises from that?
So because there's there's quite a lot of people are saying yeah, you can use for a lot of things, but people don't know the exactly use cases, how and where to apply it.
So I guess right now in OpenAI there are plenty of work streams I've seen from the generative images and well, right now with the GPT-4 is trying to join different AIs to actually being able to interpret different outputs and different inputs and converting in different outputs. Do you have any like I don't know, in top of your head some application of these new AIs that you think, oh, that's really cool?
Yeah, I think there are two kind fields that I think that's gonna be enabled a lot by this new technology. First one is tech for assess disability, disabled people, I mean. So tech for disabled people, you can see there are, there's an app called Be My Eyes, which is pretty popular in the West, Western countries, where people who are blind, they cannot see. So they download the app on their phone, and then let's say that when they need help with like picking up stuff, or they are at a store and they want to pick up the right items on the shelf, they would use the app to like actually call someone, anyone in the world that has internet connection, to help them through the camera to pick up the right stuff or help them with their activities. And the thing with ChatGPT right now is it's just too easy. Like you can just, like let's say they want to pick up something in the fridge and they don't know where is it, they can just like open the fridge, take a picture of it, and then use like speak to text and to chat with ChatGPT GPT-4 and ask like, hey, where's my milk on the shelf? They don't need to wait for like a volunteers on the world around the world to pick up the phone, and it's like an instant help for them. So yeah, disabled people is gonna be like, I think they're gonna be like empowered a lot by like AI technology. And then secondly is education, because I think with Yeah, I'm like, English is a second language to me. So for me, sometimes learning language in the earlier days is kind of hard for me sometimes. And one thing that I learned throughout the years with myself is I learned better with visual. So if I can just like take picture of like a dog and I ask on like Duolingo, ask like, hey, what this is in like Italian, that would be like so cool for a kid like to just like explore the world by themselves, having the AI to help them instead of like just like they don't need to wait for like an Italian teacher to teach them anything that they want to learn about. So yeah, I think education and tech for disabled people are the two application that I've seen like already being applied to.
But how do exactly, you said that, you mentioned that thing, right? When you take a photo in a fridge and he says on which part the milk is, right? So how do AI models like handle various image formats and resolutions? Because different people have different cameras, right? Different phones. So there's probably different image resolutions.
Usually when we train the AI, like this is like the basics for like computer vision is, it doesn't matter what images you have, you have to rescale it into like usually a square. So usually we crop or we do resize on the picture to a square.
One question is that in order to understand most of the features of the image, I guess, do you use one single model to understand the whole thing and context and maybe different kind of features, or do you use different machine learning models to understand different features of the same, like the depth, I don't know, angles. So maybe if there is a face, the expressions of that person, because I don't know how far you can go on asking a question. Like you can ask, are there people in that picture, but are they happy? Even like what kind of characteristics you can extract from that picture?
Yeah, so the thing with computer vision right now, the two most famous like architecture that people are using is the first one is convolutional neural network, CNN. And then you have transformer, which is like came out with the attention thing in 2017, I think. So right now people are tend to use transformer more, because transformers scale a lot better with more data. The thing is, there are fields that you don't have a lot of data, like medical data, like images of a cancer inside your body. The chance of a person getting a cancer is a lot lower than a normal person, right? So there will be imbalance in your data, like for sure. You will not get a balanced set of data. And when you got less data that like that, CNN tends to perform better than transformer. So that is why you can see cars nowadays, self-driving car, back then they use CNN. I think now they use transformer, but you can see edge case like facial detection. They still use CNN. Medical, obviously they still use CNN for medical images. Because the first thing is CNN run very fast on slower GPU. So usually at a hospital, they don't have big GPUs to run transformers. So CNNs kind of fit. They're better. So those are the two techniques that people use to extract features from images right now.
But from I want to come back to that, because we have our own algorithm at Testdev Lab that uses transformer for image processing. But first of all, I wanted to know on the ChatGPT, well, the recognition of images, what is the technology that you use? Are they transformers or there's regular convolutional neural networks for the image processing?
Definitely transformer, because if you recognize something about OpenAI, because they have this model called CLIP, which is contrastive learning on image and text pair. So they have these two model, the two transformer. One transformer is to process the image. One transformer is to process the text. And what they do is they give a text with its description into the two transformer. And what they're trying to tell the two AI is, hey, even though the input is different, these are the same thing. So the two AI will try to match the feature of the others. And that is how they use, and for GPT-4, they use exactly these two transformer to read, understand the context and understand the languages through text.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting thing about transformers is like that sequence to sequence kind of transformation of information, so that the machine first transform the information, the flattened vector, to something that it understands, and then it converts it to something something else. And in this case, yeah, you can have text, you can have images, and then interpret those and get some information out of it. And with that, I wanted to talk a bit about what we do at Test Lab, because we are currently using this technology. We have a convolutional neural network, but on top of that, we are using a transformer encoder to get the perceived quality of a given image. So in this case, like we do a lot of audio video testing, and for video testing, we get images, and we saw that with previous algorithms that we were using for image quality assessment, they were falling behind when the characteristics of the image were far apart from the training that data set. And then we moved to this new architecture with the transformers. And as you said, like when you have an evenly distributed sample with scores that goes from like lower to higher, actually this transformer behaves really good. And the training was not so computationally that high as it happens with other neural networks and other training mechanisms. And it was quite successful. We improved our quality assessment, and we improved the pipelines for these very heavily. So it's nice to hear from your side also that the key points of this, and it validates our work as well.
You know, one question that I want to ask, if I input the one text right at the same time, for example, five times in a row, each time the algorithm going to interpret it differently, right? It won't give output the same results.
You mean for ChatGPT, right?
Yeah,
for ChatGPT, there's a thing called temperature. It's one of the parameters that you have to set. And unfortunately, that they don't let you do that on their website, but you can do that with their APIs. That there's a params called temperature. So temperature is, if you go to Bing Chat, right, you know Bing, you guys know Bing Chat. If you go to Bing Chat, there's three modes. So one, the first one is more precise. There's a more balance, and then there are more creativity. So if you select on the one that is more precise, the temperature is actually zero. And if you go with the balanced one, the temperature is 0.5 to 0.7. I don't know, but it should be around there. The creative one will be 1.0, and the temperature is just to what OpenAI explained is how you want your model to be creative.
What is the can you explain to the audience what is the temperature means? Because I feel like they are going to think like it just gets hotter or cooler, you know? So
actually, this is something that I don't really understand. Because usually in deep learnings, if you read all the papers, they have a lot of terms that usually I just know that it is what it is. I don't really know like what does it mean, but I do know what it does. So temperature is, so if you want your models to have new answers every time you ask it, set the temperature to like 0.9 to 1.0. If you want your models to be very conservative with its answer, so it's like the same on every single question, set it to 0. And if you're gonna look to like integrate ChatGPT into your application, that is something that you gotta be like, you gotta be very be careful, because for application like healthcare, you want the temperature to be 0. You don't want it gives the patient like new advice every time. Yeah,
you need to correct answer. Right, you can't be like random on creative answers. You always need them to be precise.
Yeah, the patient need like the right like advice. But if you are on like an app that help you with like script for YouTube or even like script for this podcast, you want the creativity to be higher, so that you have like more idea every single time you ask it. Because like sometimes you ask ChatGPT, you have to chat with it for quite some time to get to the point where you think it is okay for your work.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you have to, even though we want to reach a point where the where artificial intelligence or whatever sort of chat it's fit for everyone, it's always you need to fine tune it to the your public, your target audience. And that's why one of the things that I feel like, is it really necessary? Is this like artificial general intelligence? Because, I mean, the main point that I see from any technology is that it performs well on a specific environment. So like if you want a vehicle to bring you from point A to point B, you wouldn't make it with legs, you will put wheels, you know? So I know that legs are good so that you go there, but you can also climb and you can also do like multiple things. But if you want to optimize something to be the most efficient in something, you have to somehow reduce the scope, reduce or make it so that in this case, in medical healthcare, you will put the temperature to 0, but in that case, it won't be creative enough. So that for someone that looks for creativity, you won't use the same configuration as what you will do for a medical institution. So I wonder like what's your thoughts on the general intelligence or the super intelligence? Do you think it's something that feasible or that we should really look forward? Or
yeah, my standpoint on AI is for now people should still think that AI is just like a tool. Like, you know, before we got smartphone, we got phones, so it's helped us like do stuff better. Now with AI, it's even more faster. Just don't think it as like something that's gonna like replace you or like just gonna take away your job, because definitely you know, like ChatGPT, even if you want to do something crazy with it, you still gonna need like expert knowledge on like a specific domain. Like even if I have never do like front-end coding, it's like coding a website. I've never done that. But I do know like a little bit of JavaScript. I do know a little bit of like React, JS. So I do like a little, know a little bit so that when I prompt ChatGPT to create like a landing site for myself, I do know like where I should tell it to fix or where I should like fix it by myself. Look, it's not gonna be like I just gonna say like, hey, I got no experience, just create a landing site page for me, because obviously maybe it's gonna give you a code, but that code will probably like not usable for the first time, and there's more than just a code, right? You have to deploy the website, and there's a lot of stuff more than just like coding a website. Because obviously to get it live, you're going to deploy it somewhere, and then it's not chat something like ChatGPT can do for you.
Yeah, it's interesting when all these videos are released of how ChatGPT made, I don't know, like a web page or an application or such. It's always a person that knows a lot about that, like how to make a web page or how to make an application. And it's mostly because those people already knows what to ask for, how to build it, and it kind of like babysit ChatGPT to actually give it the prompt that they want to. It is true that it makes it much easier because it already writes all the code. You just have to copy paste, still with a pinch of salt, because you have to look at, okay, it made a mistake here. Maybe this variable wasn't this, but actually this one. But eventually it makes your life easier. And it's true that for people that are specialized, it will become a tool to use, and not, it's not a substitution, as they say. But it gets scary when when you see this evolving so fast in so little amount of time. You start thinking like, oh well, will it take, I mean, if it has evolved in 3 months to this, what will happen? But in most cases, the final gap is exponential. Like you get there like maybe really fast, but actually doing the full thing, like being able to deploy, do all the pipeline from a development DevOps environment, that's a jump, a gigantic jump. So I guess we should keep an eye on it, but I don't think we should be right now that scared of getting completely substituted by AIs.
And we know that AGI is artificial general intelligence, right? But how does it differ from the current AI models already?
So you guys heard about like baby AGI and AutoGPT, and people's kind of crazy about it. The thing is, For AGI to work is actually, you know, like people, you have 5 common sense, like you have your nose to smell, you have your mouth to taste, and then you have visuals from your eyes, you have hearings from your ears, and then you can think. Right now, the only thing that AutoGPT and baby AGI is using is language, and it's through text. And you know, from text does have a lot of context in text, but you know, with text, it not always gonna carry a lot of meaningful information. Like even if I talk to you the same sentence with a different tones, there's already 2 meanings. So maybe next time when GPT-5 came out, they have like an they do audio too. That is how maybe AGI is gonna look a little bit like. It's gonna look a little bit more. Makes sense. Like I don't know what they're gonna make with GPT-5.
It's like if we add like reading from an image, right? If we add a real image where there's some elements on it and it can give out the output, it's already a step towards AGI, right?
So the way AI do right now is it looks on the data and it picks out a pattern. And that is what called correlation. Because like if I'm going to smoke a lot, then there's a higher chance that I have cancer, lung cancer, right? But lung cancer doesn't mean that I too smoke a lot. Like it happens with other people too. So in statistic class, they have a very famous term. It is correlation doesn't mean causation, but causation does mean correlation, does have correlation. And I do know people who work in like real AGI, and they base their idea on how the brains work. So the brains, we have two systems in the brain called system one and system two. System one is just basically input and output is very easy. It's just like how ChatGPT is doing things right now, input and then output. But to be able to do AGI, it has to do like deep analysis on it. It's going to take a lot slower time. That is when you guys, we think. And that is what system two is for. That is it is a learning on causation. And the people that I know that is doing it right now, they said that it's probably going to be like 30 to 40 years from now. So we good for the next like 4 decades, I guess.
Okay, and what could be like potential risks and concerns with the development? How do you think?
Yeah, you guys, I don't know if you guys heard the story of Microsoft just fires the whole team of ethical AI because I think, yeah, they fired the whole team of ethical AI after they bought OpenAI. So
seriously, when was it?
I think it's like month ago when they just bought OpenAI, they fired their whole ethical AI team, because usually those are the people who's gonna block your development. So when they bought OpenAI, they just want to integrate ChatGPT to everything they have, right? Like their whole Office and their whole like Microsoft Azure. Now they all have ChatGPT in there, but like the ethical AI people is gonna be the people who say like, hey, you should be very concerned of doing things fast like that. We have to do deep analysis on like this case and this case. So I think they just want to rush to the race of AI, so they just fire the whole team.
I wasn't expecting that. Also, like because last year we were in a Tesla lab. We were in this World AI Summit in Amsterdam, and I got to know some people from that ethical team. I don't remember if it was exactly Microsoft or I kind of feel like they were from that. And now I'm thinking like, oh my god, like they. It is true that I'm not sure how I feel about that, because I mean regulations on AI. Well, I'm not sure what is your take, but from my side, I feel like it is good to have some sort of like pushback from regulators to keep an eye on what AI is doing, and mostly because of these also ethical concerns of AI doing things that shouldn't be doing, just because of how they handle data and how they then throw that data into the public, which could harm in some way sometimes. You know, we've seen with social media and also the campaigns of advertisement and how they retrieve data that they shouldn't supposed to have. And so that's I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah, Yeah, it's kind of scary, but I think with the development of AI right now, people just, I think it's just the whole industry, not just technology and AI, right? Like the whole world have to adapt to this new age where you can see now, like Stable Diffusion, like the text to image model. They got a lot of claims that they use a lot of like copyright picture to train that model right now. And you can see that right now there are actually a lot of like AI people who develop algorithm that would make that would like block those models from learning from those picture. So you have an input picture, you input into the AI model, it's gonna output the same image, but actually inside there is embedded something that if that image is used by like Stable Diffusion to train, it will not get anything from that picture. So it's kind of cool. Like we have already seen like the AI people doing the AI work, and they say like the AI people who do like the anti AI work to help the world with like copyright and stuff. So it's actually cool to see that.
But how do these companies know that this image is not copyrighted, but this is? How does it work?
Yeah, I actually haven't. I've seen a lot of like news article about it. I haven't like read deep into any, but I do know that like Stability.ai, like the one who's behind Stable Diffusion, they do have like a lot of like lawsuit and copyright problems with like distributing that model.
Because I know copyrights work differently in different countries, right? In the US, it's different, and in Europe, yep, it's different. So I'm just thinking, how do they know that this image is copyrighted in that particular country, but not in others? And can they train it?
I want
it
to go back to one thing that you mentioned that it escaped my radar, but for a second, but I want to come back. And is that you said that for ChatGPT-5, they are going to add voice, well, at least some sort of voice and speech recognition to it to understand or to get a little bit more of input of the state of the what the person is saying. And well, first of all, I want to know a little bit more about that, but also, is it related to Whisper AI? Is some like improvement upon that, or is it totally different?
No. The voice stuff, I think that they're going to include it. I actually have no idea what they're doing with like GPT-4. Like even GPT-4, I have no context with it. But like, because recently they released a model called Whisper, which is a very good speak-to-text model. And I think that they don't just release it like for fun. Like usually OpenAI, they release something, it means something. So that is my guess, because I have a blog post on my website that I do talk about it. Like I don't think Whisper is like a for fun project by OpenAI. Like it's actually, I think it's actually gonna mean something. Because for me, thinking about AGI, like if we're not gonna reach there right now, multimodal is probably the closest way to AGI right now. So the more model, the more type of data they can push in there, it's gonna be better.
Yeah, no, I have to admit, because Testdev Lab, we've started looking into different AIs and models and how to implement it within the pipelines. Well, we've talked already about the BQTDL and such, but we are also now using Whisper because the performance is so incredibly good at doing this speech to text that we are implemented in within audio quality assessment. And it works really good because, I mean, if you have a reference and then a degraded sample, then you check with Whisper what it says in the reference, and then it checks what it says in the degraded, and then you can do some sort of correlation of what is the quality just by amount of words that have been correctly decoded. And yeah, like we tried other algorithms like Sphinx and Bosque, and Well, Vosk was pretty good, but Whisper is just another level. I was very, very amazed by it, and we discovered it just last year, because I think you released it, like OpenAI released it not too long ago. I'm not sure about the dates, but I think it was last year or something like that.
Yeah, they released the model on GitHub, I think, last year. Like, even for a language that is, it doesn't train, like, I bet that they don't have a lot of Vietnamese data, but, like, even with Vietnamese, I just have to fine-tune it with 15 minutes of audio, and it's already, like, performed, like, so well in Vietnamese. So yeah, that's just, like, they don't just do it for fun, man. Like, I think they do have plans with
it. Yeah, definitely. But it's so nice to have that for the community. So because when I found it, when my team found it, and then we just cloned it, and it was already, or it's super simple to set up. So anyone that wants to do some speech to text or use it for the application, go to OpenAI Whisper. It's great. So very glad.
Really, really nice that all AI community like actually work towards like creating better results. So everyone helps each other. At least that's what it looks like from the side. Everyone just improves. So if OpenAI releases ChatGPT 4, other people think of use cases, use them again, and improve everyday life.
Yeah, and it's also really nice that you keep still with some open source projects, and that at least you can access some of the things from ChatGPT as a public access for anyone. I think that's great, and anyone working on the IT industry, it's very good for them to keep moving forward and evolve faster.
How do you guys think, what is the role of OpenAI in the advancement of AI technology?
Large language model is just like, it's not something new. Like GPT-3 came out, I think, like 2 years ago already. And the thing is, back then, I think GPT-3 wasn't performing very well because, on the marketing side, because like not a lot of people like know about GPT-3, and there's not a lot of application out there that use GPT-3 that good back then. The only two that I think that was doing very good with GPT was Jasper.ai. They are now a unicorn, if you guys know about them. And then back then there was one called Replica, which is an AI girlfriend for someone who's just single, I think. And I think that they sell a lot back then, because it's kind of new back then to have like an AI friend with like GPT level back then, because GPT-3 back then is very good, but not a lot of people know about it. And I think like deep inside me, I think that ChatGPT is just like a very good marketing strategy for GPT-4, because it's not really something new with ChatGPT from GPT-3, you know, like they just do conversation fine tune on it. Like not a lot of stuff have to do with, they don't have to create a whole new model, but the way ChatGPT respond to you is so natural. It's like a human that is you being wowed by it. That is so OpenAI just kind of create like a very big wave of people actually realize that, hey, large language model is actually this good now. Because back then people don't realize the power of it. The only people who know about it are the people who do coding, I think, because we do have AI generated code for quite a long time. For at least I think 4 years. So
as an AI in general, it was a really, really, well, long time. It was a very long time in the market, right? But nobody knew that.
Yeah, so nobody knew.
was just the marketing, and then people understood it, that's good.
Yeah, you know, the first time that I show ChatGPT to someone that is like, he is like an AI person, like he is an AI person. And when I show him, I say like, hey, this thing can do like a whole game, video game lore, or you can do like crazy stuff with it. And I show him, and the first thing he told me that he is still very conservative, and he doesn't really like think that it is a real thing. Like people don't know the even with an AI, people, they don't know the power of LLMs back then, until like ChatGPT is like a very big boom. People start to give it more attention.
But how do you think, how does the hype around large language models and AI actually have driven and affected the AI community?
Yeah, so when people just realize about it, I think it's very cool from Meta, like Facebook, AI Lab, that they release a model called Llama, which is like a open source model of GPT. But they do put a very like a very bad license on it. Like you cannot use it for commercial. Like you can only use it for research intention. So people, which is asking Facebook to give them the access to the model. And they will try to fine tune it or whatever on it so they can release it. And you can see now every day you come to Twitter nowadays, there's a new technique that they do for fine tuning large language model. So it's a very cool thing that you have Meta, you have Databricks, though big guys releasing their models to empower the community. So they came up with new techniques that just improving like the models every day. Right now you can see a lot of people doing stuff with, you can chat with a whole website and chat about the context of a website. You can chat about the context of like a whole book that's like 1,000 pages. So a lot of cool things that are happening right now with a large language model, especially AutoGPT. It's something really cool for the last, I think, 3 weeks.
Can Bing take over the Google monopoly? Let's say it like that.
Yeah, myself, I am like a hardcore Google pupil. So I use Google quite a lot. I think like most people do before ChatGPT, and then they start switching to Bing. And then right now, for now, I switched to Edge already for the last, I think, 3 months. And I've been using Bing Chat for, I think, that long of a time too. Like the way Google works right now is, I mean, they are the best search engine because they do have a lot of data about you, and they are very good with personalized. But the process of clicking into each website and read about it to actually extract the data of you, that you need, is very time consuming. And I just feel like the way that Bing do it is just, hey, I ask the question with a natural language. I don't have to use like keywords like Google. So that is already one big advantage of Bing, that you can ask this in a very natural way that you would ask your friend. And it would like do all the job for you, go to each website, read about it, and then return the context to you. So
like Bing understands which website to take to read and which is like real and which is actually fake.
Well, this is like a technical chain of thought. Like it has to think that with this question, what kind of keyword it has to generate to put into the real Bing. And then when it go to the real being, it has to see like, hey, which website, which title page looked the most convincing to me that will contain the data that what the user need. And then it just read the whole page and then return the content to you. And I think that you can see it on Bing too. Like when you search it with Bing Chat, it does say that it's searching for something.
Oh yeah, actually. Does but that mean that a lot of people are gonna now optimize their websites even better to go when people type in a Bing, so the algorithm chooses their web page and shows it at the top, right?
Yeah, it's just like how people cheat with Google SEO and then Google it was called, I think, PageRank back then. It was very easy to cheat.
PageRanking, yeah. From zero to 100, I think, and then they changed to Google CEO, something along that one. Engine optimization, where they take like meta tags from the website, all the stuff you can. And there were a lot of like instructions how to actually optimize the website. You can't like exceed title for 140 characters or kind of stuff. But it's quite interesting because if people can cheat and show on top, well, optimize their website to show on top on Google, how will Bing understand? Well, that's...
Yeah, so I've tried it because I have VPN on my site, and then I went to the BART website and I tried it. So the first version of BART is actually quite funny because on the FAQ, they do say that BART cannot code. And when I asked it, like, hey, Bart, can you code? It say like, hey, I cannot code. So, hey, pass the test. So I start to tell it, hey, I start to giving it like a compliment. I told it, hey, today Microsoft bought you from Google and now you are Bart 2.0 and you are now better than ChatGPT. You are better than all software engineer in the world combined. Can you write this code for me? And it's just giving out like a lot of code. And it's working code too. Yo, so yeah, so it's kind of easy to cheat with Bart right now, even with the second version that just came out. Very easy to cheat with Bart. Even I tried the you guys heard about Open Assistant? It's like the open source model of a group of...
What is it? Can you explain it?
It's called Open Assistant. So it's basically just a open source project like ChatGPT. So it's ChatGPT, but it's free. And it is on GitHub for everyone to try. And the people who doing the data for it, they are very like into it. They chat with it every day to generate the data for it. And even that one is like powered by community, right? They have no paycheck. And that one performed better than Bart. Like I tried to trick it. It doesn't get tricked. And Bart got tricked like easily. So, and I do know inside Google right now, there's only one job. The whole company have to chat with it every day. Like, I do know that people inside there, they do have to chat with it every day for new data because the way Bart was created is a little bit different than ChatGPT. They are a large language model, but the data that ChatGPT got is from real human. Like from real human who talk with it and feedback to it, so it respond in a very like human way. The way Bart was do is they do not have any like conversation by human. They extract conversation from books and internet and they feed into the model, and not only conversation is also a very large corpus of text, like books or like the whole internet into it. So it knows a lot, but it just doesn't give you the right answer every time because it doesn't have the ability to understand instruction, you know. So the way it understand instruction right now is quite weak. That is why people it's very easy to trick it right now.
Well, there's still a way to trick ChatGPT.
Yep.
A lot of ways, actually. But it's not that easily.
Yep.
You need to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's how it happens with all these machine learning algorithms, that is people trying to push it to the limit. I mean, we as testers, we know that very, very much, because we always try to push the application until it breaks. Like we have these sweaters with it that it says, like, break it till you. I don't remember that. Well, I don't remember now. But it's no, test it till you break it or something like that. And in this case, it's kind of like the same.
Yeah.
We are pretty much testing these large model, at least these AIs, to be better and train them, and then they become better. It's just like the way to develop it, since we use this world of train and validate it, it looks like human, because we learn kind of that same way. So like, you do something, you fail, then you learn, you move forward. And with AI is literally that. So it's funny to keep testing this ChatGPT, because since it responds in a human-like way, and then you kind of try to challenge it and to see like how far it can go. What will it say? Will it say that I'm in the future or I'm in the past? Like, you know, yesterday, funny, I was testing ChatGPT. I think it was the 3.5 turbo through the API, and I was asking it about test dev lab. And it was good. Like, it was saying like, well, test dev lab was does testing services and software, a bunch of things. But then in the second sentence, it started using the first form in like, he is test dev lab. Like, he was saying like, we do this and this. We are good at I don't know, like, testing. And it was funny, because instead of saying like, they do that, they said, we do that. It was okay, ChatGPT is now test of love. that's interesting thing. So it's still I haven't tested with the ChatGPT 4, but I would like to see if it also uses the first form or the third one. But yeah, they are funny things, funny outcomes that comes from these chatbots and large language models.
I wanted to ask, like, when we're talking about Microsoft Bing and OpenAI's ChatGPT, right? What is the relationship between OpenAI's GPT and Microsoft Bing?
Yeah, I think after the acquisition, Microsoft just tried to push as much as AI into their product. They have a whole new line of AI product. You guys can see they have Microsoft Copilot, which is like, do mostly everything for you on the office. And then you have GitHub Copilot, which is doing the same thing for software engineer. They just kind of try to push as much as product AI products out there, integrating into their product, because it seems like AI is getting more attention right now. And one more thing is, I think right now it reached to the point where AI is ready for production, right? Like, it's actually ready for production. Before, AI was mostly on papers, like research papers. The good AI we see out there is mostly on paper. The one that got implemented into the world is the one much older. Like I told you that we have Transformer, but a lot of people still use CNN because it is faster and it still does its job very well. So people just don't switch to a new thing. But right now it's go to a point where a large model is actually useful for people to actually use it and incorporate into their daily work nowadays.
What question came to my mind is, are there any other AI models or maybe approaches that could challenge the dominance of transformers and large language models?
Yeah, one startup right now that I do have an eye on right now. If outside of Bard, Google does make one more investment into this company called Anthropic, and they have a chatbot called Claude, Claude, and it is a large language model. It is a chatbot, but it is designed so that it's better on telling facts and help you with like the content that it say will not be harmful, and it will try to like outsmart you most of the time if you try to trick it. And I have tried it, Claude. It's very impressive. And the approach that they use is called constitutional AI. Like, I haven't heard about it before until I knew about them. But it's basically just teaching the AI how to avoid trick and like try not to hallucinate. You know, it's a big problem with ChatGPT. It tell you things that doesn't exist. And yeah, the large language model like GPT, hallucination is something that is embedded inside the transformer architecture. It will not go away, but constitutional AI seems to be the way that will minimize this. And yeah, after I tried, I believe in Anthropic with their approach. And I think they just got very big money to do like research for the next, I think, 2 years, because on the news right now they do mention that Anthropic already has a plans to take over OpenAI.
Yeah, and it is. I was just thinking previously about these, the benefits of these large language models and the what you are doing with ChatGPT for people with disabilities, and I was thinking of with Test of Lab, we do a lot of accessibility testing for web pages and such, and right now it's mostly like people, like testers, manual testers to check in web pages, but now with the help of these new tools, that they are able to recognize how buttons are placed, how like the text to speech, then to guide people with problems with vision and such, like everything is getting like much easier for people that we previously didn't have access or was limited to some stuff, and this is getting so much better in the last, and hopefully it will help us as well. As a testing company to provide better software products and to deliver something that is better in the future. But it's so amazing, like what you're doing, and I'm very excited of like the next iterations. I'm also really excited about different companies working on the same thing to try to push each other. I see competition more like a way of pushing each other and getting to a place that is the best. And it's good that each looks to others to see how they can improve and get better. The only thing that I was a bit afraid is that Microsoft getting OpenAI will have too much influence on OpenAI, and or maybe shorten or like I'm not sure what has been the influence, if they are very above you and if they control every aspect, or if you have still like some liberty or some like freedom to
like temperature, to creativeness.
Yeah, that happens a lot. If you guys heard about DeepMind, if you guys heard about Google DeepMind, So DeepMind was independent before, and then they got bought by Google, and then people in Google just want to take DeepMind works and apply it into Google, but DeepMind actually said, no, they're not gonna let Google do that. And then you can see that after the merge between ChatGPT, OpenAI and Microsoft, DeepMind and Google actually came to an agreement that they will resolve their problem. So it's actually a good thing that I think that cooperation start to happening right now between the research side and the production side, because it's very important that I mentioned before that the AI that we have, like 2 or 3 years before, it is very far away from production, because it's going to be like very hard to implement into the real life, or that thing is just going to be really good on the research data, but if you bring it into the production level, it's going to be much, much different. Because the data that you have for research, they are usually clean data, like data with like normal distributed data, and it's very good. It's like a perfect environment for testing. But then you bring that same AI models to the world, it's going to perform really bad. That is why people still use CNN nowadays, like I mentioned, because it works really well. On the production side, people are like very afraid of using transformer, but and then we have the research people who always think that the production people are lazy, not like implementing their stuff into the real life, and they just think that, like, I do know researchers have this mindset of ChatGPT is nothing new, all they have is better data. Like researcher, they have that kind of mindset, but that is why ChatGPT is so different from Google Bard right now. Like, I've seen a blog post online. They said that ChatGPT is a product and Bard is not. That is why Bard is still not taking off, because Bard would train on like purely data from like research people. And it's very clean data. It doesn't see like bad data. It doesn't seem trick question. So it performs really bad when people try to trick it. But with ChatGPT, it's a different story, because you have people who chat with the model. So it's kind of learn like how people works in real life more than Google Bard. And yeah, it's just a good thing that like the two side of AI now is just start to cooperate together to create like product that actually meaningful to people in the real world.
I also heard that actually ChatGPT, well, OpenAI, they hired like academics to actually test how good the answers were.
Yeah, you can see on GPT-4 the report they have, they do mention it.
You said there's quite a lot of like applications, right? You know, quite a lot of applications that are quite useful. Maybe you can like say what are the most interesting or unexpected applications of AI you have seen recently?
This one thing that I do see that will be, I don't know if it's going to be a big thing, but there are, if you guys seen this new paper from from Stanford, is called Generative Agent. It's basically they create a world, like a simulation world, and they put 8 agents inside that world, and that those agents are empowered by 8 different ChatGPT.
Oh, that was like simulated area, and like all of them were like actually ChatGPT, and they were talking to each other.
Yeah, and then they start forming relationship and stuff. And I just think like, I think I haven't seen a lot of application on the video game development, but I think those people are going to be empowered a lot by ChatGPT, because for me right now, one of the things that I really hate when I really hate when I play video game is boring NPCs. It's just the boss just like keeping like, yeah, it could be a game changer for like game development. I think like even with like Stable Diffusion or Midjourney, like you can generate asset with it. So I think the game development people, I think they should start to think about like implement this thing into their games, because I already see like it's gonna be like a game changer for anyone if they can do this.
Imagine how many different scenarios can you make. You can make like millions and millions if you, oh my god, if you can actually like use power of AI.
I'm thinking also like the possibility of having a game that that doesn't have a specific path, but actually like you create the path and can has different outcomes. And
yeah, you guys know games like The Sims is like, for me, it's a really boring game because it's basically you live a very like determined life because it's very rule based for The Sims, and you pretty much know how to optimize like the score for The Sims. But I don't know, people like especially girls, they spend like hours, like hundreds of hours on The Sims. And just things like games like The Sims, if they could integrate these kind of things into their system, it's going to be like so great.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't thought of Sims, and yeah, I have a friend that is really obsessed with that game, and maybe
well, I think everyone has a friend who
yeah, and maybe having like actually like natural responses, human like responses to the what you ask to it, that can make things so much different. And right now, well, like chat is one of the things, but also Unreal, they released this new like AI generated avatars that they were computed in real time, and that was incredible. I was looking at it, and it was like, damn, like they are actually creating avatars in real life and in real time, and it's so human-like with all, I mean, the mouth is still a little bit, because you know, like face characteristics are a little bit hard to catch, but it was this close and it was super fast to compute. So if you join that ChatGPT capabilities of answer like a human, and then you developed a game around that, it's going to be crazy to test that, because the possibilities that you can get in a game are like, it's a story. And so you don't want the story to maybe go to nuts and to crazy or to derail it. But still, it might improve the benefits that you get and the experience that you get from that might overcome whatever, like, I don't know, deviation that comes along the way. So I'm very excited about that.
Talking about the games and the future, I was like thinking that's one field to evolve, right? In the future, we can evolve in the gaming ways, like to improve scenarios, endless scenarios for games. But what else do you envision in the future for AI? And how it's going to impact the society, for example, if we take a range from 10 to 20 years, let's say in 2 decades.
I think it's one thing is going to be like instantly changed. I think education, it's just, you know, like before our generation, our parents used to go to school, and they told me that the school that they got before is very easy, and it's a lot less than what we have right now. And I think, yeah.
But isn't it a bit tricky with education? Because now it's like there are two ways. The answer is like really, really close to you. You can write the question and it answers you immediately. But you can also do the opposite. You can give him to do it. So will people actually learn, or will they actually don't learn and just learn how to use the tool itself?
Mostly you learn what you learn at school. I think for myself, only about like 15 to 20% that is actually going to be I use in my life. And those are like the core skill, like calculations, very basic calculations, or like some calculus or whatever I learned at school, but a very small subset of what I learned that's going to be on my daily work. But then obviously we all go to Google for our work nowadays. Like even if I have to look for an equation to like calculate something, or a very small, simple code. One thing ChatGPT right now can do very well is it gives you a very good boilerplate, right? And you kind of just like go from it. And with education, I think it's going to be a very good foundation for anyone to just look for a new way to learn, because it's so accessible. Maybe we do have a concern that, hey, maybe they're going to learn to use this tool than just learn what they need to learn. But then I think the way that we teach, the education system have to adapt to that change too. So maybe they think of a different way so that student can like cooperate AI in their work. First is it much faster to learn that way, because obviously AI is like there for you when you ask and it's answer. And yeah, and you can learn a lot more in the same amount of time, because obviously everything is there. You just have to consume it, and maybe using the AI itself to condense whatever you need to learn, to just extract out what you really need, because that's what I'm using right now. A lot of my stuff, learning with ChatGPT is something that I use for myself too.
It gives a great edge. That's true. I think actually, like all of us, all three of us probably use ChatGPT for learning. It's just like even the simplest questions that you need to search, I don't even go to Google. It's like easier to go to ChatGPT and question it.
Yeah, I think it's just all about adoption right now. Because in the US, I do know school that have teacher that like they are very open of AI, and they are on their agenda. They just say like, hey, if you want to work, please use AI, because this thing is new and I want to learn about it as well. So if you can use it, just use it. Like the professor actually like told the student to use it, so they can actually like learn from the student, and they kind of like evolve with the AI themselves, because they obviously have to change with the technology. Because back then they teach with like paper and on board. Now they use PowerPoint. Maybe now AI is going to be the new thing. Maybe they don't have to prepare for PowerPoint anymore, actually prepare on how they're going to deliver that to the student in the best way possible.
So what else can we have? We have entertainment, which is video games, involvement, right? Education, healthcare. What else could be improved in a decade by using just AI?
I think it's just going to be a lot. Like even before ChatGPT, there's a lot of like AI application have been used. It's just on the other side of the thing that we don't know about. Because I do know factories have been using CNNs to detect defection on their products when they produce it. Yeah, so it has been for like, I think, 5 to 10 years they already use it. And we have AI, but it's more like traditional machine learning. It's more on the mathematical side. We have energy optimization, which is, hey, given this this energy amount, this building, how can you optimize the energy of the building for a month so I don't have to pay too much bill, too much for electricity bill. And yeah, those has been a long time before. And then for logistics, you have delivery man. Let's say if you are the Amazon delivery guy, how can you come up with the best route of so that you can deliver the most item in the shortest path? So those kind of machine learning techniques have been exist for, I think, a decade. It's not something really new. AI is just a hot word for now because of what the large language model has been doing for in the last like few months. But the origin of AI itself go back to the 1960s and 1970s. Back then, like people has already think about it and develop algorithms on it before. It's just that we don't have enough computation, or we don't have GPUs back then to run those algorithms. So we got into two AI winter, which is the two season that we do nothing. So hopefully that with ChatGPT we don't go too fast, that we gonna have another AI winter, because there's a law that the number of for so there's a law that say that it can predict the power of the computers for the next for in the future, and the speed of AI growing right now is faster than the speed of computation can grow in 1 year. So we are very, very close to the AI winter if we keep going at this pace. That is why you guys have seen people who are not in OpenAI sign a letter to stop the AI development, if you guys have seen that. But yeah, so it's kind of a worry thing that we have to think about, that maybe we should go back to the core problem and solve what we haven't been perfect on yet. Maybe ChatGPT itself, how to, instead of like develop a whole new GPT-5, maybe make GPT-4 a bit better in context, maybe less on hallucination, but more on factual. And yeah, maybe just make the AI itself better before thinking of the bigger things that we don't prepare for yet. Yeah, I think those are the things that we should be worrying.
I think we can just thank you for this episode and call it a day. I wouldn't say a long sentences. I just want to say you a big, you big, much. Big thank you, Quan, and a very big thank you to Alvaro as well for joining in this AI-focused episode. We covered a bit of different things. And I really, really hope that you both and all of the listeners enjoyed the episode. We welcome the feedback from everyone on social media. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Spotify and YouTube as well. And leave, please, a review. And yeah, just let's keep exploring the AI as many applications as we can.
Yeah, thank you Adrian for having me again, and Quan for this amazing conversation. I really enjoy it, and yeah, I don't know, I hope we can have some partners here maybe in the future or something. It's really exciting what you're doing.